Welcome to Examine Life. Hi, I'm Steve. Our live show has been off the air for a few weeks, and the show's back now. Unfortunately, Pat won't be with us tonight, so you're going to be alone with me for an hour. Good luck with that. I'll try to keep you interested and thoughtful. I've always tried to explore the human motivations and actions behind things rather than just calling names or making ostentatious excuses. Tonight I want to talk about our divided nation. The previous program was a shining example of that division. All I heard was one political group slamming the other, and it works both ways about 50-50. How'd we get this way? We are a divided nation today. Why is that? I'll start by asking the question, why do people form groups? Because basically it's people thinking in groups. We form groups and cliques and gangs, and you name it, because it's a biological imperative from our past. It was a survival trait, as it is today in some inner cities, where joining a gang might save your life from your own neighbors or from people from other neighborhoods or who knows what. But that's a kind of a strong imperative to join that gang for protection. Back in the old days, we used to join a group for thoughtful reasons because in the very old days, continued existence was a very day-to-day thing. The choice of which people you associated with could mean safety or loss of freedom or death. So the group that you joined was a very important decision, and you'd better think it through. In early America, when daily subsistence was a little more assured, people joined groups for other reasons, to feed the hungry or improve their neighborhood or otherwise help those in need. They didn't expect their politicians to do it. They did it themselves. So joining that group was a big deal, and people did it with a lot of care and thought. Helping other people seems to be one of the things that's built into us, although my friends would say I'm probably a dark soul because I believe we all do things for selfish reasons, but selfish doesn't necessarily mean a bad thing. It's all in what you get out of it. So in a modern version, rich people join country clubs to show off, kind of pounding their chest, how much money they have. People join political groups. People join the Boy Scouts, or they join a team. The defining difference in the old days was that people who joined charities and church groups were usually personally involved in helping others. They didn't ask a bureaucracy to do it. So they wanted to join the right group, the group that really was going to do what they thought. Nowadays, people seem to join a group just because a friend said the group was cool or they saw something edgy on their computer screen. You know, people don't have a lot of adversity compared to the way it used to be. Your back is always covered. You know, if you make bad decisions, somebody's there to catch you. So joining groups is a relatively shallow thing for a lot of people. Rarely does anyone other than pundits or politicians bother to do any homework on political issues they might espouse. They simply tour the websites and news programs that agree with everything they've been told, and then they spit it back out in a way that says you're an idiot if you don't agree with them. I love the debate because it solidifies or alters my own view. So when I go online to a discussion group, I generally go someplace where I know a lot of the people are going to disagree with me. But I don't usually make statements. I just ask questions, such as, do you really believe that any politician is truly just looking out for us? Do you believe that the politician is guided by noble compassion or just by what will get him or her reelected? Do you believe the social systems truly help people grow and prosper? How many times do you think land masses have been altered by climate change over the life of the earth? And what, in your opinion, make the glaciers recede in the past? Those are questions. They're not statements. And all I ask is that people logically answer that question. Give me a definitive answer that makes logical sense. And sometimes they do, and I've changed my view as a result. So, but in general, what I get is people calling names. Why is that? Why are people so sharply divided when we're all in the same country. And in spite of what a lot of people out there think, it is a wonderful country. For a long time, we were the sole real power in the world, and we could have taken over the world. How many other countries who have been in that position in whatever the size of their world was at the time and did take over all the countries around them? This is a good country, and it's full of mostly good people. My questions are based on known human nature, not what a particular political view is. What I usually get back is name-calling and yelling of groupthink catchphrases. When I ask questions to probe into the reality behind the catchphrases, I get more of the same. I rarely get to a point where we actually have a logical discussion of the validity of the pros and cons. I'm always open to be enlightened. I value new ideas as long as they're based on logic and empirical evidence. And I've changed my views, as I said. Usually what I have found with a little bit of digging is that people generally have fairly simple reasons. In the past, it was so easy to convince people of a political view, or it wasn't so easy, because everyone had to work hard or go hungry, and perhaps even be exposed to the elements. In that environment, you don't trust someone until you know them better, because the only one who truly has your back was yourself or someone who loved you. But was that a bad thing that you didn't automatically trust what people told you? So people need adversity in their lives. That's what causes them to become discerning individuals that are curious and want to know more before they make a decision. Now you're so protected from making bad decisions that why should you bother thinking? You go back to kind of the basic human nature. Government tells us that we can't starve because if we make any poor decisions, there's a golden path to free calories. We can live in subsidized housing if we need it and are willing to do the little bit of work to get it. If you want to go to college and don't want to pay for it, well, you shouldn't have to. It's your right. So if you want to take some kind of empowerment or basket weaving courses that won't land you a real job, well, then go right ahead because you won't have to be responsible for that decision either. If times are a little tough, you can just live with your parents. Maybe an easy job with high wages will come along. If not, then you still have options of a roof over your head, and if necessary, some compassionate politician will take care of you. Not having those kind of options was kind of fortunate for me because I learned in the very different days of my youth that work brought food and shelter, no matter how little the pay or how hard the work. So it's important to think about the causes of why people are divided. Why is the nation so divided? We see it in our politicians because any of those who watch the news or pay attention to what they're saying, they see how they're just completely divided right down the middle. Now that, to me, is a reflection of the people of the country, because this is supposed to be a country of, by, and for the people. So I don't feel we can blame the politicians, because even if they lie to us to get elected, that shouldn't happen more than a few times before we start to think a little bit about who they are and what we expect from them. And I don't think we should expect anything from them. I think we should be constantly kind of pushing them and testing them and finding some more severe sort of penalty if they just elect or get elected and then just lie and don't do what they said they were going to do. You know, a lot of people say that early in our country that elections were so cordial and friendly and full of good manners. I don't know that that's the case, but I think a lot more people were kind of honorable, I think because you had to be. And the lying wasn't quite as bad as it is today. I think today we're getting the kind of the feeling that it's expected, so we don't hold them responsible for it. But people themselves weren't quite so divided. There were times, like during the Civil War, you know, which where the nation tore itself apart for a good reason, to stop a horrible practice. In order to do that, it took the rise of a new party, the Republicans. And the Republicans and the Democrats fought for probably over a decade over the idea of slavery. And finally it tore the nation apart and brother killed brother. And there were times like that, but in times of peace or in times of war, for instance, World War II, people stuck together. And there were dissenters. Even after Pearl Harbor, there were dissenters that believed that we shouldn't go to war for any reason or that thought America was a bad place. But it wasn't the majority that it seems to be today, or at least a significant minority. And I don't know why. I don't understand why people hate their own country so much when it's done, in addition to some bad things, it's done a lot of good things. You know, the slavery started before the country became a country. After it became a country, it took a while, but the slavery was ended. How many countries went through what we went through to end slavery? In most countries, it just kind of phased itself out. So America is a wonderful place, and we need to try to understand why people are so divided and how we can stop that from happening or from getting worse, how we can make it better. So people need to be more responsible for their decisions. So without real adversity, they don't feel the need to be responsible. Perhaps we need to allow some adversity to happen to our kids. You know, I'm always impressed by the fact that most of human history is in some fashion available at the click of a mouse. Most of science, most of history, most of everything is available at the click of a mouse, and yet most people have very little knowledge about the world. You know, you can look at a webcam of many of the great cities and countries all around the world, and most people don't do that. Most people don't know their geography or have any idea where many of the countries are. You show people pictures of the politician that they say is going to save their world, and they don't even recognize them. You ask them for the name of famous presidents or so on. They don't recognize them. Or you give them the name of someone who was a president or some other prominent political figure, and they don't know who that is. People don't take the time to learn about things anymore. And I think it's because there's not enough adversity. Sounds kind of cruel, but I think that's the case. You know, all the classic literature, most people have not read it, and yet it's free. The Gutenberg Project has a great deal of literature free of charge. You can download it and read it. LibriVox has a lot of the great classics actually in audio format, free of charge. And yet people don't, in many cases, have never read about that. People don't know what World War II was about, or who won it, or who we were even fighting against. People have no idea how Einstein changed the fundamental view of the physical world. They just know that he was a great scientist with crazy hair. What they can tell you is who's ahead in Dancing with the Stars, or how many caffeine drinks they can pound back. One group thinker can say with confidence that they know that Barack Obama was not born in the United States, even though they have no proof. And another can tell you with deadly conviction that Donald Trump is an evil racist who will destroy the world, although they seem to be a little vague on the details of how they know this or how he plans to do this. Why do people want to believe these political catchphrases? I've found that most people are just thinking of themselves these days. Perhaps we're recipients or possible recipients of free money. That's a reason. You know, you want to support those who are going to take care of you in time of need. And of course, there's always a reason for your need that's outside of your own choices. Perhaps we want free education. Or maybe we want a guaranteed wage no matter how many people can do our job. There's a politician out there that promises he can give us that, so long as we also agree to the other ideas that he or she is spouting as well. Or maybe we're more compassionate and we believe that the poor and hungry need help. But why should we make a real personal effort and take our time when we have a government? Simply find a politician that will promise to put a chicken in every pot, all on our behalf, of course, in return for our vote. And then we can sit back and say how wonderful and compassionate we are, that we care so much that we voted for someone without asking too many pointed questions. And because all of us want to feel good about ourselves, we need to believe that we have done all that we can. So we will become very angry if someone says something that pokes a little hole in that illusion. And that's what I've experienced. You start poking at illusions and people really get upset. But they don't seem to want to discuss the actual illusion. They usually just want to call you names or tell you that you're ignorant. Seeing ourselves as members of a group who all think that way gives us a belief that it must all be truly for the good of all. Maybe we join a political movement and we really go to work and do hard work for it. Even that brings the security of being a member of a group that does all of your thinking for you. All you have to do is say the right things, and all of your companions will pat you on the back because you have the right thoughts. You're surrounded by people who appear to be thinking the same things you are saying. If you don't look too closely, you can believe you're taking the moral high road. You're better than those who don't think like you. If you're a politician, maybe, who wants to be reelected time after time after time, the best way to do that is to speak out to those who aren't willing to make tough decisions based on real understanding of what's happening and infect them with the mind virus, that meme. When people's cognitive immune system is weakened by a lack of real adversity, the meme will thrive, just in the same way that a cult can subsume your whole personality. And what is a meme? It's actually a neologism coined by Richard Dawkins back in the 70s, I believe. It's an idea or a behavior or style that spreads from person to person within a culture, similar to how a virus spreads to a population. The word meme is a shortening of mimeme, from ancient Greek. It means imitated thing. Some researchers actually propose that it acts exactly like a biological virus. I'm kind of explaining this because a lot of people use the word meme, but I don't know if they really understand what it means. Proposed treatment based sometimes on that proposition that it acts like a virus. There's a lot of research being done now on whether memes are actual valid kind of mind viruses or what they are. It acts as a unit for carrying ideas and symbols and cultural ideas or practices. It can be transmitted from one mind to another through writing, speech, gestures, rituals, with a mimic theme. Kind of a cultural analog to gene. It self-replicates, it mutates, and it even responds to selective pressures. Usually removing it requires it be replaced by another meme. When enough susceptible people are infected by a susceptible population, groupthink can emerge. So what is groupthink? And I'm going over this again because I'm trying to understand why people join political groups, and when they do, why do they not look into the details of what their group is saying? And hopefully you can agree with me that this happens on both sides, that people say things that you know to be wrong, but are you looking at both sides that way as an individual? That's what we all need to do. Wikipedia says that groupthink is a psychological phenomenon that occurs within a group of people in which the desire for harmony or conformity in the group results in an irrational or dysfunctional decision-making outcome. Boy, does that sound familiar. Group members try to minimize conflict and reach a consensus decision without critical evaluation of alternative viewpoints by actively suppressing dissenting viewpoints and by isolating themselves from outside influences. Oh, this sounds frighteningly like our modern university campuses. If anybody comes on the campus with any thoughts that these young people and, frankly, the professors don't want to hear, they are shouted down because they don't want to have any dissenting viewpoints or outside influences. Kind of sounds like a religion, too, if you think about it. Groupthink was coined by social psychologist Irving Janus in 1972. The group makes faulty decisions because group pressures lead to a deterioration of mental efficiency, reality testing, and moral judgment. They ignore alternatives and tend to take irrational actions that dehumanize other groups. A group is especially vulnerable to groupthink when its members are similar in the background, when the group is insulated from outside opinions, and when there are no clear rules for decision. You know, before Hitler was in charge in Germany, his people would go to the beer halls, and you didn't dare dissent when he was giving a speech because you would be physically harmed. And I hope that you can honestly think about where that is coming very close to occurring now, in what venue in our country, in what educational venue. The symptoms of groupthink are an illusion of invulnerability. Because you're in a group, you feel like people can't hurt you. And collective rationalization. Members discount warnings and don't reconsider their assumptions. They just carry them forward as if they're fact. Kind of work on faith. A belief in the inherent morality of what you believe. Members believe in the rightness of their cause and therefore ignore the ethical or moral consequences of their decisions. Stereotyped views of outgroups, negative views of enemy, make effective responses to conflict seem unnecessary. Have we ever heard of climate deniers? Direct pressure on dissenters. Members are under pressure not to express arguments to guess any of the group's views. Another thing you see on a lot of our college campuses. Self-censorship. Doubts and deviations from the perceived group consensus are not expressed. An illusion of unanimity. The majority view and judgments are assumed to be unanimous. Self-appointed mind guards. Members protect the group and the leader from information that's problematic or contradictory to the group's cohesiveness or their views and the decisions they make. Does this remind you of anyone? Think closely. I'm sure each group is thinking, yeah, that's what those conservatives do, or yeah, that's those libs in a nutshell. And therein lies the problem. Many in our country are so deeply sunk into the rut of their particular groupthink that none of them have the courage to lift their head and say, wait a minute, what you just said isn't actually true. Or, hold on, that doesn't add up. Are we going to get our courage back to stand up to people that maybe we've been in a group with or been friends with when they don't sound truly rational if we think deeply about it? Are we going to stand up and say, no, that doesn't sound right? Because I'm not seeing a lot of that today in either side of the group. I'll give an example of that later on that's probably going to be a little irritating, but you need to give an example of very profound political things today. And because I'm doing the show alone tonight and I don't want to put all of you to sleep, I'm going to have probably a couple of breaks and take a little time to gather my thoughts. So remember, this is Examine Life, and this is KKRN 88.5 FM in Bella Vista at Round Mountain. And it's a community-supported radio station, so remember that. If anyone's listening in this community, you are the reason that the program is on, and you are the ones who decide what the program carries, including myself. So keep in mind that we're here to give you what you need and not necessarily what we need, that we're here for you, that we want to educate you. So I'm trying to do that tonight. I want you to think about what I've been saying and try to look inside yourself. Are you living in groupthink in parts of your life? Ask that honest question, and I'll be back in a few minutes.
Give me a kiss before you leave me, and my imagination will feed my hungry heart. Leave me one thing before we part, a kiss to build a dream on.
Join the discussion. KKRN boasts a variety of talk radio, both from local and syndicated sources. We want to stimulate thoughtful and meaningful conversation. KKRN can offer more real conversation because we are supported by listeners. You have a voice.
Make them believe they're true. Oh, give me your lips for just a moment, and my imagination will make that moment live.
The infinite possibilities of music are showcased by the eclectic panorama of song styles that you can find on KKRN Radio. You won't find our musical explorations on more mainstream commercially driven stations. From classic country to new age, from classic folk to classic rock, from blues to jazz, and music from outside our country. You'll find it all on KKRN listener-supported radio, radio that makes you listen.
Alone with my fancies, I'll be with you, weaving romances, making believe they're true. Oh, give me lips for just a moment, and my imagination will make that moment live. Oh, give me what you alone can give. I'll kiss the pill I dream on.
Okay, I'm back. This is Examine Life, and I'm Steve, all alone tonight with you. And I've been talking about a divided nation and some of the causes for that as I see them. And remember that Abraham Lincoln said that a house divided will not stand. A very small, short sentence, but it means a lot. You know, Rome was divided before it fell, and Rome was another one of those empires that everyone felt safe in and didn't feel that they would ever want to or that they were ever have the possibility of someone invading or taking it over. Nothing is invulnerable, and nothing is unending. I was talking earlier, before I went to commercial or to a break, I was talking about groupthink and giving some definitions of groupthink, which is basically what it says, thinking in a group without really deciding whether or not the group is saying the right things or has the right ideas or the right programs. The group that decided on what groupthink was, also, as they were doing their research, they decided that you may be able to prevent groupthink by adopting some of the following measures. The leader should assign the role of critical evaluator to each member. The leader should avoid stating preferences and expectations at the outset. Each member of the group should routinely discuss the group's deliberations with a trusted associate and report back to the group on the associate's reactions. One or more experts should be invited to each meeting on a staggered basis. The outside experts should be encouraged to challenge the views of the members. Now, how can that even occur in a university? They try to challenge the views, and they're not allowed to. At least one articulate and knowledgeable member should be given the role of devil's advocate. And the leader should make sure that a sizable block of time is set aside to survey warning signals from rivals. Leader and group construct alternative scenarios of rivals' intentions. But I just, with the current moods that people have, I don't see this happening. Such as, encourage members to challenge the views or bring outside experts in to challenge the views. Academia is not letting that happen in many, probably most cases. And their rationale is that, for instance, when it comes to global warming, I'm not taking a side here. What I'm saying is it's taken as religion. And they're saying the science has decided. Well, you know, that's not true. There are scientists knowledgeable in climate who say that it's not decided. I'm not saying which side is wrong. What I'm saying is that it's not a religion. It's supposed to be a science. And if everything else, any political view, even if the alternative sounds horrible, if no one is hurting another person, you should listen to it. If nothing else, it helps you understand your own viewpoint better. The worse their viewpoint is, the more it should support your own and allow you to articulate your own even better. One of the reasons that I don't think it's going to be very easy to change groupthink is, as long as the politicians are focused on re-election, human nature being what it is, and the memes are they're feeding, continue to provide that re-election because people listen to them, are infected by the meme or the groupthink, and re-elect them, they'll continue to promote their particular kind of groupthink, as well as those who follow them, because in the case of a politician, it keeps them in power. In the case of the follower, it's easier to follow them than to actually think. Or perhaps you get a free phone or free food. Or maybe you think that, because they're against abortion, that that you like it, that you like them. And you really don't think about what they want to do in place of that for society. If we simply take a side and spout whatever the majority of the group says, then we can get back to our lives of entertainment, self-absorption, and avoid doing the real work of actually trying to find the real truth. And it takes some work. You can't just look at the news. You can't look at any group of websites. You have to dig through the garbage to get to the real truth of a situation. And most people don't seem to be willing to do that. I want to give an example that's kind of hard-hitting, and this example is not taking a side on this social issue. It's taking a close look at the details of the social issue and asking each and every one of you, are you looking at these details? Let's take the example of abortion, politically speaking. It's a very difficult social riddle with political solutions that will never satisfy most people. One side says that a woman should be able to do anything with her body that she wishes. So then that begs a logical question, at what point does a fetus become, quote, not her body, unquote? The other side says that killing an unborn fetus or even an embryo is murder. But what do they propose we do about the problems and consequences of unwanted pregnancies of all types? Some of them simply say to say no to sex. There are so many reasons why that's unrealistic that I can't even list them. But let's address this idea of murder. What exactly is any murderer taking from the person that he or she murders? The only thing that's taken from them is their potential to live a future life. At any moment in your life, there is no guarantee that a person will live another second. What's taken from the victim, then, is just any possibility of their continued moment-to-moment evolution, or you could say becoming, which is a Buddhist term. There's no longer the possibility of continuing in their lifelong development. Is that not exactly what's taken from an aborted fetus? They may not be considered by humans. Pro-choice individuals say that a fetus is only a potential human being, that it's not a human being until it's out of the womb. Or they usually have some other criteria as well. But isn't that true of each and every one of us at every moment in life? At each moment in life, aren't we just the possibility of the future? Isn't an embryo, even if it's early in its early days, no more or less than the potential for future development, just the same as an adult? So again, there are pros and cons to both sides of this divisive political issue, but I never hear anyone talking about the reality of what it is and what we're calling it. And I think it's because rather than having a logical, truth-seeking discussion, each group just spouts the approved groupthink phrases. Protect women's rights. Abortion is evil in the eyes of God. Don't have sex outside of marriage. Or it's a woman's health issue. So why not have the real and difficult discussion? If you're looking straight at a decision with the blinders off, the choice you make then will be a real one with meaning, and will likely be different than the one that you will make when you can see the choice only through a filter that allows the easy route without admitting personal responsibility for the consequences of your decision. I'd like to think that humanity will advance beyond self-gratifying decisions, but self-gratification in its many forms is a part of human nature. And the only way to reunite a divided nation is for each individual to think carefully about what they believe and why they believe it, in every smelly technicolor detail. But that kind of thinking isn't inherent in nature, so it takes us to rise above ourselves. It's a skill created and strengthened by adversity in life, which is the one thing that much of modern society seems to want to eradicate. Parents don't want their children to experience the pain of failure anymore or the denial of pleasure. They don't want to feel like they're bad for allowing their child to fall. They even want to protect their grown children from building their own life just because it's a little tough out in the world. It's always been tough in different times and for different people. Politicals and bureaucrats want to keep their position, so they'll do what any of us would do. That is, whatever is necessary for that to happen. If that includes keeping many people in substandard lives by taking away responsibility for their personal choices, or giving caring people the illusion that they're compassionate by voting for someone who tells them that they can be compassionate and caring by proxy, then they'll do those things to stay in office. Politicians and the rest of us are doing things for kind of selfish reasons, but being selfish isn't a bad thing in and of itself. It's the actions that you take that can hurt society. And our politicians are the ones who are kind of the personification of all of this. I blame the populace, and I think even Pat disagrees with me on that, but I blame the populace. She feels that we elect these officials and they should do what we elected them to do. But I think we're expecting them to be superhuman. I think what we need to do is manage those people. And if there's even the slightest hint that they're not doing what they're supposed to do, we need to dump them and get somebody new. And we don't do that enough because, again, they're saying the things that we want to hear or they're making excuses and we're letting them. And the politicians are... We probably need to work on them, but keep in mind that we vote for them, and they're the ones that everybody is pointing to and saying they're bad, or but they're just like people. They're actually just like kids. I mean, look at the way they're acting today in Congress. And this has happened on both sides. I could say that one side does it more than the other, but. You know, a lot of the people who are in the minority party right now are saying that the reason they're all freaking out is because the Republicans did that last time. The Republicans didn't support them last time and didn't help them do what they were trying to accomplish, even though they had the majority. But do two wrongs make a right? Because the Republicans didn't support them last time, and if that's true... They're doing the same thing today. So how long does this go on? Is this kind of like the Hatfields and the McCoys, where we're going to have this feud going back and forth forever? And you didn't help us, so we're not going to help you, and we're not going to help you, so you're not going to help us. How long does this go on? How long do we keep putting these people in there? Now, of course, people like me believe that term limits are the way to go, but who are we going to expect to do those term limits? The very people who would be limiting their own terms. And if you believe any of what I just said about personal motivations for all of us, including the politicians, they're never going to form term limits. But if you think about it, that's our biggest problem. When you listen to the Speaker of a House or a Senate Majority Leader and they say, well, we're going to try to get that passed, but we're having trouble getting enough votes. Again, examine life. Look behind that statement. We're having trouble getting votes. What that statement is saying, in a kind of a hidden way, is that all of the different people from different districts throughout the United States are looking at each and every decision only in terms of how will this affect my reelection. So think of the burden that would be relieved from the shoulders of the people and the politicians if they were just going to be there for, say, 8 or 10 years and were never going to come back. They wouldn't have to spend any energy on getting reelected. Now, hopefully, too many of them won't do what a lot of people would do, and that is spend that time making things great for whatever business they happen to be in when they leave the Senate or the House. But the bottom line is they wouldn't be working towards re-election. That would disable a lot of the lobbyism that goes on. it would benefit a lot of things, but it's not going to happen. So what we have to do is limit those terms ourselves and keep electing new people until someone gets the message. And again, as individuals, we need to spend some of our time looking at what these people are saying to get elected and looking at their history, and not just what our groupthink group is telling us, but look outside of that. Look what the bad guys are saying about this person we think we should elect, and look at their actual history, and look at what their predecessors have done, and look at, can they really accomplish what they say they're going to do? And would it be good for the nation if they're going to do it? You know, I don't have a problem taking care of people and helping people eat and not starve, but we're taking away too much adversity. People don't have anything to help them form their character like they used to. So it's kind of sad that we don't really think the way we're supposed to think. And I hope that someday that changes. But if in the meantime, I can somehow explain ways that we can come up with this and how we can hold Congress responsible. I'm going to take another short break and then I'll be back. This is Steve at Examine Life, KKRN 88.5 FM in Bella Vista at Round Mountain. Community supported radio. What a wonderful world.
I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
It is a wonderful life, and you can find snippets of it on KKRN live shows, done by local volunteers and supported by you, our listeners and underwriters. You can contact our show at examinelife@kkrn.org, or if you want to financially support the radio station via underwriting for your company or by donation, call 530-337-1101.
I watch them grow, they learn much more. I never knew, and I think to myself, they really say, I love you. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow, they learn much more than I ever knew. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Welcome back. This is Examine Life. I'm Steve, and we're talking about groupthink, memes, a divided nation tonight. I was talking a little more about politicians because they are the kind of the face of our nation, but all of the people are the ones who elect them and who implement some of their programs. You know, I think the bureaucracy, we also misunderstand what bureaucrats are. We constantly call them public servants, and I'm sure there are bureaucrats out there who are actually public servants, who are doing what they do for the people. But, you know, I've applied for those jobs years ago, and I remember the people that were applying alongside of me, and I don't remember anyone talking about doing wonderful things for the nation or, you know, moving ahead with democracy or representative republic. What I remember was people enthralled by the salaries, the benefits, and the rich retirements. So I think another reality we need to face is that our bureaucrats are not there to serve us. They're there for a great job, and some of them really work hard at it, and some of them just don't care. And in both cases, they're not going to get fired for what they do. So don't put bureaucrats in some kind of place where they don't belong. They're just people who are looking out for number one like everybody is. But in some cases, looking out for number one is a good thing. If it makes you feel good to do good things for people, then in my opinion, and I've had this argument with Pat, in my opinion, that's another form of being selfish, but it's a good form. It makes you feel good to help other people, so you do it. If a bureaucrat feels good because they helped you, and I've run into some of those who are actually trying to have a nice day and help other people have a nice day, but I've run into many who aren't. So just understand that they're just people. They're not public servants. And some of them are part of how our nation is divided. We all are responsible for our divided nation, and much of it is based on the fact that we don't pay attention, and sometimes we're divided because we're not really thinking through. There are people that we would agree with if we took the time to listen to them, just like, you know, the current president. No matter what you think of him, he is your president, and he's going to be your president for a few years. Why would you not want that person to succeed? Many people who are just, for no good reason, anti-Democrat supported Barack Obama because of what he said he was going to do. And some were disappointed in what he ended up doing, and some weren't. But the point is, both sides, many people did support him. A few didn't, but a lot did. He got elected twice. So why can't we support this new president? Why do we have to be so much against somebody, regardless about the whole popular vote thing? The man who got elected president, why can't we just go together, support him? Because if we support him and he fails, he falls all that much further. So why not try to help him out? So far, the nation has managed to survive with what I think are some pretty destructive programs that we have. I don't know how much longer it can survive that way, but, you know, give the guy a break. Sure, he doesn't talk like a sophisticated politician. Frankly, I find that refreshing. He probably shouldn't be tweeting the way he tweets, but you know what? He's the president. He's going to have his style. I don't see why that makes him such a bad guy. I don't think he's going to end the world or cause nuclear war, and I would like for somebody to give me proof of why, how he's going to do that if they believe he's going to. So let's try to be a little less divisive. Make our politicians do what they say they're going to do. Don't just believe what they tell us or anybody in our group tells us to believe. Think about everything and think about it deeply and look at it and say, does it really make sense to me with what I've learned about human nature? Because whenever you look at human nature, the answers become very clear, at least they do to me. And, you know, some of the new psychological theories coming out are reality therapy and choice theory, where all we need to do is figure out why we made choices that got us where we are today and what choices we're going to make to improve our life tomorrow. And in many cases, it's not any more complicated than that. And so when you choose to elect someone, make sure that you've thought about it, because you're putting your stamp on that person and you've become responsible now for what that person does when they get to office, to at least a certain degree. And if you reelect them when they haven't been good the first time, then you're 100% responsible for what they do, because they're just being human. They're looking out to get reelected. They're just like everyone else. They know what they want, and they're trying to get it. And on a social scale, think about a fraternity, a brother or sisterhood organization, or a secret society, or good old boy lodges. You know, when many of those politicians that we like to think are so much for the people are in their special club, and they never see the people. And yet, we somehow want to think that they're for the people, so we vote for them because they seem like a real personable guy who's out to protect me. And you have to ask yourself, is he really out to protect you? What is the motivation of a politician? what is the motivation of a voter? What is the motivation of everyone in the country? Because each person has their own reasons for doing what they do. And we need to question those. We need to think about those. Because it's the only way that we can arrive at a place where we elect the right kind of people. You know, this president we have now is doing some things that I think are good. He's tightening the lobbying rules, so we can't have as much. And it's not just for the lobbyists that he doesn't like. It's for all of the lobbyists. He's doing some things that I think are positive. So why don't we give him a chance? Why don't we not be so divided about this? Lincoln was right. I don't know how much further we can go being as divided as we are. It's a dangerous world out there. And it was a kind of a dangerous world inside the country when Abraham Lincoln said a house divided cannot stand. He was concerned for his country. And that war, even before the war, slavery was tearing us apart. And being the good people that this nation is made of, we killed many of our own brothers to eradicate that horrible practice of slavery that, again, started before the United States was the United States. So remember that we cannot lightly make these choices about who we elect to make our laws, to enforce our laws, to make our judgments. We need to either believe in our country or not. And if you don't believe in your country, if it's that bad, I don't think there's an option for changing it to make it what you want. Perhaps it's time just not to be there anymore. But think about what I said, and I'm going to take another break, and I'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Give me a kiss to build a dream on, and my imagination will thrive upon that kiss. Sweetheart, I ask no more than this, a kiss to build a dream on. Give me a kiss before you leave me, and my imagination will feed my hungry heart. Leave me one thing before we part, a kiss to build a dream on.
Join the discussion. KKRN boasts a variety of talk radio, both from local and syndicated sources. We want to stimulate thoughtful and meaningful conversation. KKRN can offer more real conversation because we are supported by listeners. You have a voice.
Make them believe they're true. Oh, give me your lips for just a moment, and my imagination will make that moment live.
The infinite possibilities of music are showcased by the eclectic panorama of song styles that you can find on KKRN Radio. You won't find our musical explorations on more mainstream commercially driven stations. From classic country to new age, from classic folk to classic rock, from blues to jazz, and music from outside our country. You'll find it all on KKRN listener-supported radio, radio that makes you listen. I'm back on Examine Life, KKRN 88.5 FM. This is Steve. We're minus Pat tonight, which is why we have so many breaks. I'm running out of things to say. I want to talk a little bit about the press. And when I say the press, I mean television, the internet, newspapers, magazines. Think about every news story that you hear and take some time to listen. I hear a lot of people talk badly, for instance, about Fox News. But then when you ask them if they ever watch Fox News, they tell you no because they never say anything intelligent. So how do you know if they never say anything intelligent if you don't watch them? When you go on the internet, do you go onto stations where they say just what you agree with? Or do you go places where you might get in an edgy argument with someone or maybe strongly disagree with what they say? Again, as I said before, I've had my opinion changed from time to time by having a discussion with someone when I started the discussion believing I was 100% right and there was no way that I could be wrong. But there was a part of it I didn't see. And that's what happens with groupthink is we get to the point where we can't see outside of our own opinion. We just don't have the mental hardware to do that. So what we need to do is examine ourselves and our own responses, and one of the best ways to do that is to examine them by listening to what other people have to say, especially when it's completely opposite of what you believe. So, and that's for both sides, for all sides. It's not just about conservatives and liberals and libertarians or politics. It's about anything in life, you know, in science. There's a person, I can't think of his name right now, but he's a psychologist, and he's trying to build a website that does nothing more than forces social psychologists to post their experiments online and their materials and how they did their experiment as it's going along so that everyone else can determine if their results are biased. And he's having a great deal of trouble getting that done because social scientists don't want to make things that public because a lot of their assumptions are biased. A lot of their conclusions are biased with predetermined outcomes that the rest of the evidence they're going to ignore. So you can't even depend on what's called scientific studies. So I want you to examine life, examine your own responses, examine what everyone else says, and look at all opposing opinions. Please try to do that, and believe me, you'll be amazed at what you discover. Don't just listen to what people who believe the same as you say. This has been Examine Life. I hope it's been worthwhile for you tonight. Pat will be back with us probably on the 17th. And until then, have an examined life, have a wonderful life, and a happy life.